Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tosti Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai, Lord Krishna. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Vishnu Prasaya Bhutale Sri Mati Bhakti Vinata Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gorvani Pachami Vasvesa Sandhani Vaska Janati Vasachami Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavanchcha Sri Rupam Sadhujatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitamastam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvaditam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Vavita Sri Vishakam Vitamastcha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. October 21st, 2012, Vrindavan, India, reading from Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 7, Knowledge of the Absolute, Text 29. Jaramana Mokshaya, Mama Shritya Yatantiye, Te Ramata Vidu Kritsnam, Adhyatman Karma Chakilam.
Adhyatman Karma Chakilam.
Please check.
Jamana
Mokshaya.
Mama Shritya Yatantite.
Mama Shritya Yatantite.
Te Brahmata Vidu Krishnam.
Te Brahmata Vidu Krishnam.
Adhyatman Karma Chakilam.
Adhyatman Karma Chakilam. Anybody else?
Jaramaran Mokshaya.
Jaramaran Mokshaya.
Mam Ashrita Yatantite.
Mam Ashrita Yatantite.
Te Brahmata Vidu Krishnam.
Te Brahmata Vidu Krishnam.
Adhyatman Karma Chakilam.
Adhyatman Karma Chakilam. Ladies?
Taking shelter of
Yatanti,
endeavor,
yea,
all those who
Te,
such persons,
Brahma,
Brahman,
Tat,
actually that,
Viduhu,
they know,
Kritsnam,
everything,
Adhyatmam,
transcendental,
karma,
activities,
cha,
also,
akilam,
entirely. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Intelligent persons who are endeavoring for liberation from old age and death take refuge in me in devotional service. They are actually Brahman because they entirely know everything about transcendental activities. Purport. Birth, death, old age, and diseases affect this material body, but not the spiritual body. There is no birth, death, old age, and disease for the spiritual body. So one who attains a spiritual body becomes one of the associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so one who attains a spiritual body becomes one of the associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engages in eternal devotional service is really liberated. Aham Brahmasmi, I am spirit. It is said that one should understand that he is Brahman, spirit soul. This Brahman conception of life is also in devotional service, as described in this verse. The pure devotees are transcendentally situated on the Brahman platform, and they know everything about transcendental activities. Four kinds of impure devotees who engage themselves in the transcendental service of the Lord achieve their respective goals, and by the grace of the Supreme Lord, when they are fully Krishna conscious, they actually enjoy spiritual association with the Supreme Lord. But those who are worshippers of demigods never reach the Supreme Lord and his supreme planet. Even the less intelligent Brahman-realized persons cannot reach the supreme planet of Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavana. Only persons who perform activities in Krishna consciousness, Mam Asricha, are actually entitled to be called Brahman, because they are actually endeavoring to reach the Krishna planet. Such persons have no misgivings about Krishna, and thus they are factually Brahman. Those who are engaged in worshipping the form or archa of the Lord, or who are engaged in meditation on the Lord simply for liberation from material bondage, also know, by the grace of the Lord, the purports of Brahman, Adibhuta, etc., as explained by the Lord in the next chapter. Jara marana mokshaya mam asritya yatantiye te brahmatad vidu krishnan adyatman karma chakilam. Intelligent persons who are endeavoring for liberation from old age and death take refuge in me in devotional service. They are actually Brahman because they know everything about transcendental activities. So here Srila Prabhupada talks about four kinds of impure devotees. And this is in reference to the commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, where he relates this verse back to the four pious persons, Artha, Artati, the inquisitive one, and one who is searching after knowledge of the Absolute. So this verse is about getting the best thing and going to the best place to get it. So what is the best thing? The best thing is to regain our spiritual body. Actually, we all already have a spiritual body. We have an eternal form of bliss and knowledge and eternity. But right now in conditioned life, that spiritual form is dormant. It's sleeping. It's unaware. It's not activated. And hasn't come to life, and we're thinking that we are this body. Now, anybody through a little intelligence can understand, I must not be this body. Just like if we took baby pictures of everyone in this room and put it on the wall and said, okay, match the baby picture to the people in the room, it would be very difficult to do that. Why? It's not just that our baby body was blown up like a balloon and got bigger. It's actually different. All the cells of our bodies have changed. Even our mentality has changed, I hope, from when we were 1 or 2 years old. We have a different mentality. But yet we have a sense of continuing identity. So philosophers really struggle with this. Where is this? What is this sense of continuing identity through the changes of the body and the changes of mentality? And Krishna explains, Dehi no smintam dehe komaram yoganandra titante hantara praptir dhirastatma nuyate. An intelligent, thoughtful person can see, I am something different. I am the witness. I am consciousness. I am the soul. Not that I have a soul, I am a soul, and I have a body. So a person who's a little intelligent says, I don't like here Krishna's talking specifically about old age and death. So there are certainly some benefits to being old. There are some. You don't have some of the crazy impetuousness of youth, or the foolish pride of youth, or the uncontrolled senses and sensual desires of youth. But altogether, old age is not a very good deal. And I'm now approaching the end of middle age, and I'm on the cusp of old age, and my parents lived into what they call very old age. And it's no picnic, you know. The first sign of old age is that I couldn't see a book anymore without glasses. And everywhere I go, I have to carry these glasses with me. So it's annoying, and then your hair turns gray. You know, you're thinking, oh, I'm, you know, fill out these identity forms. I have blue eyes and brown hair. When I got my latest driver's license, I looked at my daughter. I said, is my hair brown or gray? She said, I'm afraid it's gray. And it was kind of a shock. It's like, I'm a brown-haired person, and just not anymore. And people come to me and say, you've lost weight. I said, no, my face just dropped. You know, it's just not fun. And when you're young, you can go and go and go and go and go and go. And you reach a point as you get older, you can't just go and go and go and go. At a certain point, the body says, no, I'm not going and going anymore. I'm stopping, and you have to stop too, whether you like it or not. And as you get older, you start seeing your friends die. Every few weeks, there's another obituary of somebody else. And as you get older, it gets more and more and more and more and more. That, you know, especially here in Vrindavan, where people come to die, there's very frequent funerals. And if you see people in old age, you know, some people stay healthy until old age, but most people don't. My father, the last year of his life, he couldn't hear, and he could hardly see. My mother, the last years of her life, couldn't walk. So an intelligent person says, well, I don't like these things. I don't like these things having to do with the body, this old age and death. Why are we so afraid of death? Today, the person who manages the room I rent brought some other people in to see the room because the owner of the room wants to sell it as soon as I leave. And I said, oh, there's termites in the cabinets above the bed. And he said, well, you should be careful because the cabinets may just fall down. So I immediately moved where I put my pillow. And he laughed and he said, everyone's going to die and everyone knows they're going to die, but if you think it's going to come today, you want to avoid it. So I one time had an astrologer tell me, this is the point when you're probably going to die. And immediately I thought, oh, I wonder if there's anything I can do to prevent that. And I thought, what a silly thought. Of course I'm going to die. Everybody's going to die. I thought, why are we so afraid of death? Because what do we lose at death? We're eternal. When the body dies, we don't die. Death is just walking from one room to another. Or changing your clothes. Just like you say when you go to third world countries, you bring your old clothes and then you leave them there. I do the same thing. Actually, I keep old clothes here in Vrindavan. So I don't get my nice clothes gray. You know, come here, put my other clothes aside, wear my Vrindavan clothes, and leave them here. It's just like changing clothes. Nobody laments, oh, I have to change my clothes. So why do it bother us with death? Because we've invested so much in this identity. You know, we got our education. How many years of education did I have? Oh my God, let's see. 12 plus 3 plus 8. A lot. 20 maybe. So many years of education, and you have your degrees, you know, that you've framed on your wall. Mine are actually sitting in a cardboard folder. I haven't framed them yet. And you have all of your relationships, family and friends and important and influential people that you know, and you've spent time cultivating your relationships, And then all you have all your talents and your abilities and your skills and all the things you've learned how to do, and you've invested so much energy into all of them, and all your knowledge, all the things you know. People come to you, and as each one of us is an expert on something, right? Somebody will come to us and ask us, how do you do this? Like I was asking you, how to ship clothes to overseas. And we know this. You had some experience with something, and death means that's all gone. All of our education, all of our relationships that we built up, our whole sense of identity. I am this, you know. I am Urmila, Dr. Best. I've done this, and I've done that, and I've done this, and I've done that. And it's all gone. You know, we used to have a drama called The Wrong Bank Account, where this man every week, remember that one?
Yes.
Every week at the end of his work week, when he got his paycheck, he would take some money and put it in the bank. And then when he wanted to retire, he went to the bank and said, now I want to take my money out. And they said, but sir, you have no money in the bank. He said, how is this? Every week I've been putting money into the bank. And they said, show us your bank book. And they showed us, and they said, but it wasn't your account. You were putting the money into somebody else's account. So we're putting money into the account, putting our energy into this body and this mind and this temporary identity. And death means it's gone. Right? And you have to start again. And if you're materially conditioned, you have to start again in another body. And you may have been a big professor, and now you're going gag, 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 and you can't even talk. Right? So it's scary. Death is scary. An intelligent person says, I don't want this. Now, if all we were this body, if this is who we were, if this life was everything, if this was our natural place, we wouldn't mind these things. It would just be the way it is. Just like it's natural for a camel to go many days without water or food. It's just the way they're designed. But for us to go without food as long as a camel would be very difficult, be very painful, because our bodies aren't designed like that. So for us to get sick, to get old, to die, we don't like it. Why? Because it's not natural to us. We're something different. So an intelligent person says, I want to get free of this. That's intelligent. But if somebody says, okay, I want to get free of this, how will I get free of this? Well, I'll exercise, I'll take vitamins, I'll freeze my body, you know, I'll get plastic surgery. We can always tell people with plastic surgery they don't look young, they just look stretched. Right? It's not like this, you know. And they dye their hair. Of course, the roots always show. It always looks kind of funny. Right? And they wear clothes with rubber bands to pinch them there, look younger. Or someone may, as Krishna said in this chapter, worship the demigods. So of course, in the West, not so many people. It's coming now. There's this Wicca religion where people are worshiping demigods. But here in India, still many people are worshiping demigods, worshiping celestial beings independently of God. As if they were independent gods. Please give me this, please give me that, please give me this, please give me youth, please let me live forever. So people may try in various ways to live. People try to live forever by leaving something important in the world. You know, I'll build a building. How long is your building going to last? Even the pyramids and the Sphinx will eventually crumble into dust. What to speak of every other building? You know, I'll write a book. So how many books are going to be there 1,000 years or 2,000 years from now? People won't even be able to decipher it, you know. It'll be in some code somewhere. And they won't be able to figure it out. Or the example I always give is how many of you here know the names of your great-great-grandparents? Anybody here know the names of their great-great-grandparents? So that means our great-great-grandchildren, they won't know our names. And that's even in your family, what to speak of other people. But we're thinking, I'll live forever by having children, I'll live forever by writing a book, by building a building, by doing something wonderful in the world. No, but that doesn't work. None of that works. So a really intelligent person goes to God and says, please restore me to my eternal life, to my spiritual form that doesn't have this old age and disease and death, where I have an eternal identity, where all the energy I'm putting into my identity stays forever. That's an intelligent person. At least they're going to the right person. They're going to the place that can actually solve the problem. Krishna can actually solve the problem. He can restore to us our eternal situation. But even that person is not the most intelligent. Therefore, they're classed among one of the four impure devotees. So the other three is one who goes to God asking for happiness in this world. Please, God, give me happiness in this world. So in every religion of the world, I don't care if you're a Hindu or a Christian or a Buddhist or a Jew or whatever you may be, most people are going to their place of worship and saying, please make me happy in this world. Please give me money, please give me health, let me pass my exam, right? Whatever it may be. Cure my Aunt Sally of cancer. And this is what gives people faith in this world. Oh, I went to God and I prayed to him, my auntie has cancer, and then she was cured. Oh, there's a God. But if your auntie isn't cured, then do you forget about God? Just like Srila Prabhupada said that in World War II, the women in Germany, they were going to the churches, please bring back our husbands, our sons, our brothers, our fathers, and they didn't come back, and so they became atheists. So that's, they're going to the right person, they're going to God, but they're going to him with something foolish. Make me happy in illusion. Make me happy in a dream. Make me happy in a place that it's all temporary anyway. You know, adjust the dream. And then the second class of people who go to God impurely are those who are just suffering so much and they just want to get rid of the suffering. So one wants positive happiness in the world and the other just wants to get free of the suffering. You know, oh, I have some pain, let me get rid of the pain. So the person who wants material happiness is a little smarter than the person who just wants to get rid of the pain. So one person just wants to get rid of the negative, one person wants the positive. Another impure person is just someone who's curious. I wonder what's going on, is there a God, what's going on here, who am I? And then this fourth kind is the one who wants liberation. So they're a little better than the others. They're saying, I want something spiritual. But all of them are, I want for me. All of them are going to God with what can I get for me. So just like people may come to us and want something for themselves. Somebody may come to us acting like a friend, but just wanting to take something from us. Wanting to take some knowledge from us, or wanting to take some money from us, or wanting to take some connection from us. So that's not a real friend. That's just business dealings. Like you go to a shop and you ask, like you go to a shop here and you may ask for something. Oh, do you have this product? If they have it, you give the money, you get the product, you leave. If they don't have it, you leave. Either way, as soon as you see my desires are not going to be fulfilled or my desire, you go. You're not going to have a relationship with the person in the shop. You're just going to get something. So these people are considered impure and unfortunate. Fortunate because they're going to the right person. They're going to Krishna, they're going to God who can give them everything. And unfortunate because they don't know what to ask for. What they don't realize is that there's something they can ask for that would include all these other things. There's something you can ask for that will give you happiness in this life, that will remove your suffering in this life, that will answer all your questions, and that will liberate you from old age and death. and will give you, what is Krishna saying here, they get? They get entire full knowledge of several things. One, Brahman. Brahman is spirit. They get full spiritual knowledge. Then of the self, of the Atma, which is showing, of course, a distinction between God and the self. Another is Adhyatma. Adhyatma, Prabhupada's translating here as eternal nature. What is my eternal nature? What is my real identity? And the last thing they get full knowledge of is karma. Karma is what implicates us in this world. What's our problem? What's our chain? What's the whole source of all of our difficulty? So such people get all of this knowledge when they come to Krishna for liberation. Because when you get liberation, you see everything clearly. It's kind of like going above the fog, you know, or clearing the fog, and everything becomes clear. But the main thing to ask Krishna for is something quite different. There's the story, of course, of Krishna himself, who came in the form of Vamandev and went to beg charity from Bali, that Bali had taken possession of everything. He'd become the king of everything by military conquest. And he was very proud, thinking, I now own everything. But he had taken it in an illegal way. There's plenty of room here. Everybody maybe move up, like, yeah, there you go. One of the purposes of ISKCON is to bring the members closer to each other. So Bali was owning everything, and he was a little proud. I am owning everything. So Krishna came in disguise and said, I've come to beg some charity from you. And Bali said, what would you like? And he said, I'd like just 3 steps of as much land as I can cover in 3 steps. And Bali said, oh, you foolish person. Said, you should ask from me, because I own everything. He said, you should ask from me something so great that after getting it, you'll never need to ask anybody for anything else. So, of course, Bali was not capable of giving such a thing. But Krishna is capable of giving such a thing. Krishna can give us something so great, so wonderful, so all-inclusive, that all other things are included. And we don't need to ask for them separately. We don't need to ask for them at all. In fact, we don't need to go to Krishna saying, please give me this, please give me this, please give me this. Now, if we're at the point where we do want these things, it's better to go to Krishna than to try to get them separately. It's better to ask Krishna for material happiness and freedom from material pain and answers to our questions and liberation than to go to some other being or to try to just figure it out ourselves separately from Krishna. Because what happens is, if you go to Krishna with them, you may inadvertently find out what Krishna really has to offer. You know, if you go to the store that has everything, even if you just go there to buy, you know, a rubber band, when you're there, you may find out that they have everything. So if you go to Krishna even for something insignificant, like Dhruva Maharaj is a good example of this. He went to Krishna for a kingdom. His stepmother, the epitome of the evil stepmother, poor Saruchi, she's epitomizes the evil stepmother. And she said, you know, now that I am with your father, your own mother is not wanted anymore, and therefore you are not wanted anymore, and you can't even sit on your father's lap. What you speak of inherit the kingdom. So there. So Dhruva was very offended, and he thought, I'm supposed to be the next king, I'm supposed to inherit the kingdom. And he went and he did austerities and, please God, give me money, give me power, give me money, give me power. But when he saw Krishna, he gave up those, when he saw Vishnu, he gave up those desires. Now, that doesn't always happen. When Daksha saw Vishnu, he didn't give up his material desires. But when Dhruva saw Vishnu, he said, oh, now I see that you are the diamond and what I wanted was broken glass. So if you go to Krishna for broken glass, when you find Krishna, you may abandon your interest in broken glass for the diamond. But the best thing is to go to Krishna for the diamond in the first place. At least to have an idea that that's what one should do. So what is that diamond? That diamond is love. And it's interesting that although in all the religious systems of the world, the practitioners are mostly going begging for material things, or some are begging for salvation, for liberation also. Please, Lord, give me salvation, give me salvation. Usually those two things, what we call bhakti and mukti. They're generally going for material happiness or salvation. What's interesting is also all the religions of the world teach that what one really should ask for is love. And that's what Krishna's saying. He's saying, ask me for that, give up everything else, just surrender to me. Sarva dharman paricha jamamekam sharanam vraja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishami mam sucha. You won't have any worries, you won't have any problems, you won't have any entanglements. Just think of me, manmana bhava madbhakto. Have some exchange of love, little exchange of love. Just give me pashram pushkam bhantayam yomi bhakti prajati. Just with some love, give me a flower. With some love, give me a little water. Just establish a loving relationship with me. And then everything will be there. And what is love? Love means I just want to make the other person happy. I'm not trying to get something. So these impure people, they're trying to get something. Even they're trying to get spiritual liberation. They're still thinking, let me use God for something I want to get. Instead of, let me just have a loving relationship with Krishna. And because he's Krishna, because he's God, because he's everything, Vasudevam Sarvaniti, so everything is included. When you have a loving relationship with God, then you're going to feel happy in this world, no matter what happens. Happiness is not what we have externally. We may think like that. If I have a big house, if I have a lot of money, if I have a lot of security, if I have a happy family, or if I have a lot of freedom, I can do whatever I want. If I have good health. But you know, you can have all those things and still not be happy. And you can be happy without those things. There's plenty of people in the world who have those things and they're so unhappy they commit suicide or they become alcoholics or drug addicts. And there's plenty of people who don't have those things and are happy. There's not a one-to-one correspondence. We all know that. We've all worked for something in the world and gotten it and then said, so? Is that all? Right? You worked really hard and you got the house and you looked around, it's a beautiful house and just the way you wanted it, and that's it. That was it? So? Yeah. So everything is like that. That's not happiness. Happiness is that you're happy inside regardless of the circumstances. Whether you're rich, whether you're poor, whether you're free, whether you're bound, whether you're healthy, whether you're sick, whether everybody praises you, whether everybody blames you, whether you have no family, whether your family hates you, whether you have a happy family, whether your family's a mess, whether you live in a nice country, whether you live in an oppressive country. I mean, we'd all like to live in a nice country with a happy family and plenty of money and good health, etc. But real happiness is not like that. Real happiness comes from within, from knowing I have nothing to do with these things. Therefore, when one attains love for Krishna, one is happy in this world. It's not just that you're miserable in this world and you're going to be happy after death when you go to heaven. No, you're happy in this world. And the distress of this world doesn't touch you. You may know, oh, I have a cut on my finger, I have to put on a bandage, but you actually don't feel the pain. It's just interesting. Just, oh, that's interesting. Like if you're in a car and the light comes on in the car, and you think, oh, I have to put petrol in the car, but you don't feel hunger pains. So when you actually have love of God, you don't feel the pains and pleasures of this world. You have a much higher pleasure. So your material happiness and your freedom from material distress is taken care of. And as Krishna says here, you know everything. So your curiosity is taken care of. And you're free from the bondage of karma. And you don't have to take birth again in this world. You attain your spiritual form. So your liberation is taken care of. Everything is taken care of. Just like if you work for a very nice company, you don't have to worry. What is my salary? What is my vacation package? What is my medical insurance? Am I going to get a desk? Am I going to get a chair? You know, I'm invited all over the world, and sometimes where I go places, everything's taken care of. You know, they pay the ticket, they pay the, bring me from the airport, they make sure I have a nice place to work, and nice prasadam to eat, and everything. Other places, it's not like that. Other places, I have to say, can I get a chair? Seriously. Do you have a towel? But if you're working for somebody who's together, who's organized, you don't have to ask those sort of questions. I remember once I was working on an encyclopedia for ISKCON, ISKCON Interactive. I was working in Denmark for 3 weeks. And everything was just taken care of. Here's the equipment you need. Here's all the information you need. Everything, just now you can just concentrate on your work. And it was a wonderful work. I was working like 12, 14 hours a day, and I was so happy. I didn't have to worry about anything. I never had to ask, how will I do my laundry? How will I clean my room? How will I eat? I didn't even have to ask. I didn't have to think about it. So when you're working for Krishna, when you love Krishna, you forget about yourself. You don't forget about yourself because you're some self-denying, unhappy, you know, depressed person.
Oh, who cares about myself?
Well, you forget about yourself because you're just taken care of. And you're taken care of so automatically and so completely that you just don't even think about it anymore. Yoga kshema vahamyaha. Keeping what you have and carrying what you have. Nir yoga kshema atmavan. Being established in the self and not worried about gain and say anything. Nothing. So one who loves Krishna doesn't even have to think about where's my happiness, where's my freedom from distress, where's my liberation, where's my knowledge, where's this, where's that, where's that? Where's my fulfillment? You know, Maslow talks about his hierarchy of needs and talks about self-actualization. Oh, you really, now I'm doing what I really want to do. It fits with me. I found myself. I just got a message today from one of my former students who's now a biology professor, and she says, you know, I think I finally found my dharma. I found myself. But you don't even have to worry about that. You know, in this world we worry, who am I? What should I do? What am I good at? I get this kind of question all the time. You know, how do I find my nature? How do I find my propensities? What should I do to really feel alive, to really feel that I found my place in the world? You don't even need to think about that. Because as soon as we love Krishna, our real nature is immediately manifest. Or immediately starts to manifest, actually, gradually manifests. Immediately begins to manifest. It starts to blossom. And we find out, who am I really? What do I love to do really? In the class I'm teaching at the VIHE, a number of people were asking, again, this is a very common question. So my spiritual body, is that just like assigned to me? Or is it my choice? Because Srila Prabhupada will say we have an eternal body. And we have a fixed relationship with Krishna. And then he'll also say that our relationship with Krishna is according to our own desire. And my answer to that is it's both. It's both. It's who we are. It's who we have always been. It's who we are. It's who we always will be. And who we are is a manifestation of our own desire and our own nature. It's not assigned to us. Like, I don't know if they still do it, but they used to in the communist countries just tell people, you know, you're a plumber, you're a teacher, you're a this, you're a this.
I don't want to be that.
Too bad. That's what you are. You have to live here. You know, like what happened, unfortunately, in most of the world with arranged marriages, why arranged marriages have gone out of style. Because the parents wouldn't consider anymore. They were supposed to consider, you know, what were the nature of their child and the nature of the other child. One of my godbrothers told me a story about his father, and that his father wanted to have some particular sacrifice done, and according to Hindu rituals, sacrifices have to be done by a married man along with his wife. So he went to one of the local priests in the village and said, can you do this sacrifice for me, this ritual for me? And he said, well, my wife has died, so I can't do it anymore. He said, well, I have a daughter who needs to be married. Would you marry her? And he said, sure. And my godbrother was telling me, after his sister was married, she found out that she had 5 stepchildren. The father never even asked, do you have children from your first, what's your sister? Never even looked at the situation. Right? So because there is this sort of abuse, and one of my friends calls it deranged marriages instead of arranged marriages. So now arranged marriages have gone out of style. People don't want to do them anymore. I've been told, I don't watch Bollywood movies, but I've been told that a lot of the Bollywood movies are like that. You know, that someone has an arranged marriage and they're actually in love with somebody else, and somehow or other they marry the person they really love, and that kind of thing. Right? So we may think our spiritual body's like that, that there's just this, you know, whimsical God that just says, okay, this is who you are, whether you like it or not. But no, when we love Krishna, who we really are, who we eternally are, you know, finding ourselves in this life is just finding ourselves according to our temporary identity. But we find out who we really are. And Prabhupada's talking about that, of course, in this verse. One gets one's real spiritual body in the spiritual world eternally. And even in this life, one realizes one's spiritual body, one's real self. So we should, it's good to know to go to the best person. That's a good first step. Or we should say even a first step beyond that is knowing what the real problems are. Figure out what the real problems are. That I'm in an unnatural situation. That I'm not a material being, I'm a spiritual being. I'm not meant to be having a materialistic life. That's much better than asking God for money. Although, like I say, if you want money, better to ask God for it than to ask somebody else. And then you know to go to the right person. Let me go to Krishna. Let me go to the supreme person. Let me go to the supreme source. Like in America, we have these stores where they sell everything. I mean, really, pretty much everything. Thank God you don't have them here in India. But anyway, they have these humongous stores, practically as big as a small village, you know. It takes you half an hour to walk from one end of the store to the other. In the UK, they call them hypermarkets. America, hyper means like this. So everything's there. So Krishna's like the super, 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 supermarket. Everything's included. You don't have to shop elsewhere. So to know to go to him, and then you know what's the best thing to ask for. The best thing to ask for is let me have a loving relationship with you that's not exploitive, that's not business. And if we want other things, then we can say, you know, Krishna, I know that the best thing is to have a loving relationship with you, or I just care about pleasing you, and you're just caring about pleasing me, we're just caring about pleasing each other, and nobody's trying to exploit anyone. But right now I still want a car and a TV and a nice wife and a... So I'm coming to you about them, and please you help me out with them, whatever you want to do. If you want to give me them, fine. You don't want to give me them, fine. Whatever you want to do with them. So if we still want liberation, if we still want this or that, you know, better to go to Krishna. But go to Krishna with surrender. Okay, Krishna, I'd like liberation, and I'd like the TV, but, you know, whatever you want to do, if you want to give me that, you don't want to give me that, that's up to you. And I know that what I should be asking you for is pure love. Please help me to come to the point that I really want pure love. Because you know how we get pure loving relationship with Krishna? Do you know how? Just by wanting and not wanting anything else.
That's all.
Just wanting it and not wanting anything else. That's all. You don't have to be particularly talented or educated or healthy, or you don't have to have a particular color of body. You don't have to be born in a particular part of the world. You don't have to speak a particular language. You don't really need anything else but to just want it. And of course, there's many ways that help us to want it. Instructions from a guru, association with saintly persons, coming to a holy place like this, all the processes, everything we're doing that may appear externally to be ritualistic has the purpose simply of awakening that desire for love. And then that desire gets strong enough, and when we start experiencing a little bit of that love, then it's very easy to let go of the desires for other things, because we start to actually experience how even just a tiny, tiny, tiny little fragrance, just like there are certain smells that are so strong that one little molecule of that substance, you can smell it, you know? Isn't it like that? Certain things. Camphor, I think, is one of those certain things, a very, very strong smell. So this love of God, even if you're not tasting it, the scriptures always talk about tasting it. Even if you're not tasting, even if you're just smelling it, and even if you're just smelling a little tiny bit of it, even if you're not swimming the ocean, like you come close to the ocean, you can smell the ocean. Has everyone here been by the ocean? You come to a certain point, you can smell. So even if you just smell a little bit of love of God, it is so wonderful, just that little hint, that you start thinking, oh, the TV really isn't so great anymore. Whether I have a wonderful husband or not, it doesn't matter so much. Even getting liberated doesn't matter so much. I just want love. And for this love, I'm willing even to stay in this body, in this world, as long as the Lord wants. Even life after life, if I can have love. I'm willing whatever. Poverty, wealth, sickness, health. Somebody vipare jiva nima. It doesn't matter anymore. Because you have so much love that everything is already taken care of. So this is what we should do. Go to the best person and at least aim to ask for the highest thing. Even if we can't genuinely ask for the highest thing today, at least we should know what the highest thing is and be aiming toward that and be cultivating it and be growing it and be nourishing. And everything we do should be aimed at nourishing this. And when you actually love God, then you love, of course, everyone. Because everyone is part of God. And you can't perfectly love everyone without first loving God, which is why Jesus said, the first thing is to love God, and the second, which is like unto the first, is to love your neighbor as yourself. But you cannot love your neighbor as yourself if you haven't first loved God. It's not possible, because you'll still be on the material platform. So what a wonderful verse here. And by the way, Gita, every verse here is full of so much depth. So we have a few minutes if anyone has questions, corrections, additions, subtractions, chastisements. Yes?
Thank you for the nice class. Well, you said first we love Krishna.
Yeah, take the mic so they can hear you over the radio.
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
So you're saying that we first love God, then we can love devotees. In fact, there was another question going through my mind, that in order to love God, it's a long process, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it doesn't have to be.
Doesn't have to be?
No.
Oh, you're struggling. Over 30 years, you still feel you've not gone any closer. So I think it's a...
I hope you've gone closer after 30 years.
Lengthy. No, I don't feel
not
so
any closer at all?
I don't think so.
Oh, we'll have to talk to you later about this.
So, I personally feel it's a very lengthy process. So, where is the question of loving God if we have not learned to love devotees around us?
Well, that's a very interesting point. You know, I tell the story a lot, but when I was meeting Prabhupada in 1976, so my oldest son, who was maybe a year and a half old, was sitting on my lap. And Prabhupada looked at me and he said, just like this mother is loving her son without expectation of return, in that way you should love God. And my father said, will loving her son help her to love God? Prabhupada said, no, but loving God will help her to love her son. Now, of course, part of loving God is never giving any trouble to any living entity and being kind to every living entity. That's part of our process. In fact, that's one of the 20 main items of devotional service as given by Rupa Goswami, is one should never give any trouble to any living being. One of the reasons that we're vegetarian, but not even just vegetarian. I remember there was a... In graduate school, some of the students were putting on a presentation, and they were standing at the front of the room, and one of the students looks and says, oh, there's a spider. And she stepped on it, and she said, not anymore. And I thought, wow, the devotees would never do something like that. They would take the spider and put it outside. You know, so the devotees are kind to all living entities. But why? Not separately. Not separately. Something like when you get married, of course, we may not like this, but, you know, when you get married, you immediately get a mother-in-law and father-in-law and brothers-in-law and sisters-in-law. Again, you may not always enjoy that. But the point is that when you love the husband, naturally, you love the rest of the family. It's together. It becomes part of it. Actually, what's happening now in the world with so much divorce and remarriage is this is becoming very, very complicated. So, you know, people get married and they have three children and then they get divorced. And then the grandparents, you know, if you're the parents of the man and the wife divorced him, but you had a relationship with the wife, with your daughter-in-law, now that they're divorced, what kind of relationship do you have with the daughter-in-law now, the ex-daughter-in-law? It's very confusing. And then what happens also is people get married again, and then they marry somebody who has children from a previous marriage. So there'll be, you know, two people marry, and they each have children from previous marriage, and they may stay together for 10 years, and the children grow up together like brothers and sisters. And then that couple divorces, you know, second marriages, much higher divorce rate than first marriages. So what's your relationship with your ex-stepbrother? You understand? And what about the grandparents? You know, the grandparents, what's their relationship with their ex-step-grandchildren and their ex-step... It's very complicated. And they never know, you know, do we go to the weddings? Do we send a birthday card? And some of these people have relationships for 10 years. So the point is that when the center relationship is messed up, all the other little relationships also get messed up. If the center relationship is nice, all the other relationships, but they're together. If you say, you know, my dear husband, I love you, but I'm going to insult your brother, I'm going to cheat your brother, you know, I'm going to throw things at your mother, so your husband will not appreciate that. Part of loving your husband is being kind to his family members. We're talking in theory, of course. In the real world, it doesn't always work like that. But at least you can understand the principle. So you don't first love the mother-in-law, you first love the husband, generally. And because you love the husband, you love your husband's mother, and you love your husband's brother, etc., etc. And once that gets disturbed, all the other things, you don't know what to do with, you don't know how to relate to anybody anymore. So first you have to love God, but part of loving God is loving all everybody who's also a part of God. But it's part of loving God, it's not separate. When you try to love a living entity separate from loving God, it's a mess. It just doesn't work. I mean, you can experiment, but it doesn't work. So part of our process, not that we're mean to everybody, not that, well, I'm not going to be nice to you, you're not God. You know, that's a symptom of the lowest level of religionist, what we call the Kanista. And you see this all over the world, again, in every religion. You see people who say, I love God, and they don't know how to treat anybody else.
you know, or the other sign is God's only in my temple, you know. God's only in the temple, and I don't know how to treat other living beings. Or God's only in my temple. God's only in the Sunni mosque. He's not in the Shiite mosque, and let me kill the Shiites. Or God's only in the Protestant temples, let me kill the Catholics, or whatever. Right? So this is they're religious people, but they're in a very, 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 very low level. And I mean, Jesus said, if you put your offering on the altar and you have a quarrel with your brother, just put your offering down, fix the quarrel with your brother, and then come back and make your offering. And Lord Kapiladeva said, if you're trying to make an offering into the fire of sacrifice, and you don't treat other living entities nicely, you're making an offering into ashes instead of into fire. So there's no way you can please Krishna if you're cruel to other living beings. You just can't. You have to work for the welfare of all living beings. Even if you want to merge into the Brahman, you have to do that. What to speak of if you want to go back to God. You have to work for the welfare of all living beings. But you're doing that as you're offering to Krishna. You're not doing it separately. You're not doing it to be a good person in the world so you can get a plaque put on the wall and people can take you to a charity dinner and say, you know. And now we are going to commemorate Mr. Smith, who's given $1,300,000 to our charity drive, you know, so you can get it in the newspaper. You're doing it so Krishna will be happy with you. It's part of your service to Krishna. And because you have Krishna at the center, therefore you can actually love everybody. And as far as it being a long process, that depends mostly on us. Not entirely, because there has to be mercy. It's not we're not a works process, we're a mercy process. But it does depend on us. The blocks to our advancement are mostly offenses. And and the top offense, of course, is offensive to devotees and other living entities. Because ultimately everyone's a devotee, Jivara Swarupaya Krishna and Nityadas. The other things that block it are our unwillingness. This is a whole other topic and our class is pretty much over now. But the other things that make things very slow is unwillingness to see truth. That we say, I want to see the truth, I want to see the truth, I want to see the truth, but we don't really want to see the truth. Not when it applies to me. So that's the other reason why it tends to take a very, very long time. So those who are willing, Gyanadipena Bhashrita, to have Krishna illumine their heart, as Prabhupada said, if we don't want to get rid of the dirty things in our heart, if we want to keep things as they are, then it will take a very long time. That's like rowing a boat with an anchor in the water. So I could take one more question and then we should stop. Anybody else? Question? Comment? Yes, please.
Thank you very much for the class. I was at the beginning, but I heard how you said about Dharma. We shouldn't take care of Dharma so much, but we should be interested of God at first, and I agree, but myself I found that if I have, for example, good morning program, everything I get very inspired.
Okay.
But then after breakfast I don't know exactly what to do, then this energy goes out.
Okay.
So, I mean, I feel very much that I should know what who I am I in material world.
Yes.
And what to do exactly according to life, what is to be efficient in my service.
Yes. But that you're not doing that for ordinary dharma. You're doing that as part of your surrender. Same principle. You're not loving other living entities to try to love them separately or to try to be a good, pious person in this world. You're loving other living entities because that will please Krishna. So we're not trying to figure out who I am in this temporary life so that I can perfectly fit into this, find my place in this world. First of all, you're never going to perfectly fit into this world. It's a foreign environment. So even if you find exactly the work you like to do, it's not going to be perfect material. It just isn't. But we do need to find our place and know who we are, because that's what we have to give to Krishna. So he says that in the 3rd chapter and the 18th chapter. He says, whatever your nature is, you need to do that for me, he says. He says, because you're going to do it anyway.
So it is important to find out what kind of body do I have, what kind of mentality do I have, what kind of things do I like to do, what am I good at? Because that's what we have to offer to Krishna. So that is important to do. It's not important to do separately. But it is important to do as part of our service. So, for example, one should see, what's more important to me, security or freedom? The only absolute, total, both security and freedom you can have is spiritual. But materially, people who have high security tend to have low freedom, and people who have high freedom tend to have low security. If security is really important, you should be married. And you have a bank account, and you have a house, and you have a spouse. You have a job, and if freedom is really important to you, you should be a renunciate. And you have few possessions, and if you're a real renunciate, you don't even have a home. Right? So that you have to see. What's more important? If freedom is more important to you and you artificially get married, you'll be miserable. And if security is more important to you and you artificially take the renounced life, you'll be miserable. And you'll be false. We see so-called renunciates that are living... and so-called householders who try to be free. It's a mockery. In the same way, you know, if you're an intellectual, don't be digging ditches. And if you're a dig-ditcher, don't try to translate the scripture. I mean, you know, see what you're good at. What kind, just like the difference, one difference between Ayurvedic medicine and modern medicine is Ayurvedic medicine doesn't prescribe one normal. Ayurvedic medicine prescribes a different normal for different kinds of people. There's three main body types, and they combine in different ways. So each person, I mean, modern medicine is starting to come to this idea with looking at people's DNA structure and saying, you know, really we should have different medicines for different people, and different races may even metabolize medicines in different ways and have different proclivities to different diseases. But Ayurvedic medicine says, you know, there's a certain kind of food for you that will make you healthy, but if you eat it, it won't make you healthy. So there's certain psychological foods for each of us. We have our places where we function the best. And that's what we should be doing for Krishna. That's surrender. So it is. There is value. It's just like what kind of vehicle you're driving. You're driving a bicycle, you're driving a motorbike, you're driving a car, you're driving a van, you're riding a boat. You should know, because they work differently. And each of us has a particular vehicle, psychologically and physically. And, you know, the vehicle's not me, I'm in it temporarily, but I should know what it is. Or you can also think of it like you're part in a drama. When Shakespeare said the world's a stage and everyone is simply players, he was correct. So we have a role to play. We're supposed to play it for Krishna's satisfaction. You've got to figure out what your role is. If you don't know what your role is, you're going to make a mess of the drama. So, you know, what's my role? What am I doing? And your role may change in your life also. So the varna is consistent throughout life. Ashram changes during life. You should know. You know, you should be able to look at what costume do I have, what makeup do I have, what's my character, and then play that. Like I was in a drama a year ago at a Govardhan where I was Jatila, and I figured out that everybody laughs at Jatila. Like Madhu Mangal's there, everyone laughs with Madhu Mangal, but they laugh at Jatila. So once I figured that out, then I could figure out how to play her. So if it was my role, what am I supposed to do in this life? It's not me, but it's the job I've been given. Whether I've been given it due to my past karma, whether I've been given it due to Krishna's desire, it doesn't really matter anymore. That's what I have. And you've got to figure out what to do with it. So there's, for that you can take guidance. There's many ways to take guidance. But the main thing you can do is say, what makes me feel alive? What makes me feel alive? Do I value security or freedom? Am I cautious? Am I a risk taker? Am I a people person? Am I a task person? Like that. Do I like to work alone? Do I like to work in teams? Do I like somebody telling me what to do? Do I like to tell other people what to do? You know, am I more into language, into mass, into art, into music, into what do I like to do? What kind of things do I like to do? And do that for Krishna. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Shiva Prabhupada.